From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, welcome everyone to the show tonight. My first guest, Diane Diamond, is an award-winning investigative journalist, author, syndicated columnist, and she writes about the ever-evolving and fascinating world of crime and data. And she has a new book, Thinking Outside the Crime Justice Box. And if you look in the show notes, you'll see the link to get it there. Diane, always a pleasure.
You even linked to my new book. Thank you, Dana. Oh, thanks. Nice to be with you.
Oh, you bet. Of course we will. We'll do that for you. You're one of my favorite guests.
Oh, bless your heart. And, can I share with your listeners how funny my caller ID said when you called in? It said Saskatchewan. It didn't know how to pronounce Saskatchewan.
Yeah, it's probably... It's probably confused a little bit, but that's okay.
That's fine.
Now, listen, before we get started, and you've been on the show now for many years, and it's always a pleasure having you, what about this election? Holy, you know, that's got to be something.
Holy moly, I'll tell you. I love to hear what Canadians think about it, but here, I have to tell you, I'm kind of worried about the reaction that we see in the streets from some people, and by that I mean young people. There have been not riots, but demonstrations, local, huge demonstrations all across the country, with people holding up signs saying, he's not my president. And that really distresses me. You know, we have a system, as Canada has a system, every country has a system with rules. And, you know, here's the contest, and here are the rules going in. And if your candidate doesn't win, then you get to take to the streets and scream and yell. I mean, it just, I hate to dismiss their dismay by saying it's childish, but it seems awfully childish to me. It's like going to, you know, a little league game, and if your team loses, then you complain about the rules of the game, which you knew going in. So I hope that dies down pretty soon.
Is it the, you know, I'm 53 years old, okay, and I have not seeing the demonstrations, of course, you can go back to the Vietnam War era and talk about that, but the demonstrations that we've seen in the last 5-10 years, most recently the last few years, the Black Lives Matter and all of that, is it that era now that we're going to be returning to, that we're going to see demonstrations for God knows what?
Well, and God knows for everything, right? Maybe. You know, I'm a little bit older than you, but I do remember some of the demonstrations with Vietnam, and I wasn't quite old enough to really have that sink into my psyche, but it seems like we went through a period of complacency.
Yeah.
Well, okay, politicians are crooked, whatever, I'll go vote, or maybe I won't. And now we've reawakened that patriotism, I guess you call it, and people got out to vote. That was terrific.
Yeah.
But I'm not quite sure the young people understand what it's all about. I mean, how many emails did I get today asking me to sign a petition to get rid of the Electoral College?
Yeah.
Well, that would be stupid.
Yeah.
You know, the Founding Fathers were pretty prescient when they figured that out.
Yeah.
You don't want to get rid of the Electoral College because all of the states in the middle of the country would have no power.
Yeah.
It would be New York, California, Florida, maybe Texas, maybe Michigan, that would decide who the president was, and all the rest of us would have, our vote wouldn't even count without the Electoral College.
Yeah.
So I just don't think, I don't think people are well enough informed about how it all works, and it's a little reminiscent of after the big Chad vote and Al Gore lost, everybody, not quite as viciously, said, well, you know, George W. Bush stole the election. No, he didn't. No. That's the rules. That's how it works.
And it doesn't work that way here, and that's why that the province of Ontario and Quebec usually decide who will be the next prime minister. And it's something, you know, the folks in the United States always say that, well, we should model themselves after Canada. Well, some things like elections and health care, now you don't want to touch, that's for sure.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yes, I've heard about your health care system.
Oh, no, no.
But
no.
Ours is getting sort of like that, too.
Well.
What do Canadians think, if I can turn the tables on you a little bit? What do they think about Trump?
Well, you know what? They're afraid. There's a panic in the markets over NAFTA. There's also some optimism about some of the oil pipelines that Obama would not allow. So it's going to be interesting, although now we have a Liberal prime minister. At that time, we had a Conservative prime minister. We have a Liberal prime minister now dealing with a the Conservative prime minister was dealing with a Liberal president. And now it's the roles have reversed. So it'll be interesting to see. As far as Trump goes, you know, three of my four children live in the United States. And I think it's interesting to see this, how it will unfold. I don't think there's any warmongering or anything that will be going on. I think he needs a very good team to help him get through. Just looking at him a little bit on the news today, he looked a little bit overwhelmed, and I guess anyone would be.
Anyone. He looks a little subdued, doesn't he?
Wasn't it funny watching his son, Baron, with him the other night, trying so hard to stay awake and not yawn on camera? I thought that here I am watching this at 3 in the morning. I thought, how crazy am I? But wasn't that the funniest thing?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't like either candidate.
No.
I really didn't like either candidate. But I think what people are worried about most with Trump is things are going to change.
Yeah.
Politics are going to change. The Democratic Party and now the Republican Party, too, they didn't really want Trump. Everybody's going to have to change the way they've been doing things. And you know what? I used to cover Capitol Hill. And for many years, I covered Capitol Hill. And change is over. I can't say I'm a huge supporter of Donald Trump or anything, but change is overdue.
Yeah. No, that's true. And it'll be interesting to see where it goes. We've got a couple of months to see how the transition works. And hopefully those protesters out on the street will die down and start to support the president. That's what a good citizen should do. Whether you like him or not, you should support him. That's what unifies a country. Diane Diamond is here. And she's one of my favorite guests on the show. I've been doing the show a lot of years now, and she's always great to have on the show. And
I bet you say that to all the girls.
Yeah, you bet. She has a website, DianeDiamond.com. Holy crap, I sent you an email. Whoever did that webpage for you, I love that everybody loved Raymond and Peter Boyle, Frank Baroni. Always say, holy crap. And I said, holy crap, when I saw that, and I laughed. You've got a fan.
Relatives in North Dakota, one in from the Canadian border, and they always say, holy crap.
Yeah. That's a fantastic webpage. You just got that changed around, did you? Your other one was fine.
Thank you. There's a great web guy named Scott Zumbaris is in Indiana, and he's been working with me a long time. He's had so much patience with me because I didn't get the pictures in time, and I didn't get the copy in time, and, you know, he just was very calm about it, and finally I said, all right, let's pull the trigger. The book's now out. That's my third book, and I'm working on another one, so I hope people go and visit. You don't have to buy anything. Just go and check it out, and if you got any story ideas, write me an email.
Let's jump right into the book. We're going to have Diane for the whole show tonight, and I'm so excited about that. Thinking Outside the Crime and Justice Box by Diane Diamond. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, it is a compilation of my favorite, I'd like to think, my most thought-provoking columns that I have written for Creator Syndicate over the years. And, you know, as you know, I write about crime and justice every week. I have since 2008. And I tell stories about people who are caught up in the system, either for good or bad. Some people are heroes of the system. Some people are victims of it. I talk about bad laws, good laws. I talk about all sorts of crime and justice issues that you might not ever think about yourself. And I hope that I take readers along on the journey that I follow every day, because I can't stop reading everything possible. And I just think about why things can't be different, why they can't. Why is it that a young man, I'll take one example, a young man is in a theater, has Down syndrome, and is so excited about the action film that he's watching, he forgets that if he wants to stay and watch it again, he has to go pay another $12 for a ticket. And so he doesn't leave, and an usher reports him to security. Police officers come in. They wrestle him to the ground. And if you know anything about Down syndrome sufferers, they have bad hearts.
Yep.
And as they tackled him to the ground, simply because he didn't understand he had to go buy a ticket, this young man died. And the family was so upset, of course, at his death, but they were also so upset that the police officers didn't know how to handle him. He was obviously a Down syndrome patient. And to exacerbate everything, they were not even punished for it. They weren't suspended. They weren't reprimanded. They weren't fined. There was nothing. There was no repercussion. And so maybe we need a law, or maybe we need better training. I think that's the way to put it. We need better training of officers to handle situations like that, to handle situations that evoke Black Lives Matter, that to handle situations with people they confront every day who may be mentally unstable. And that's an officer's greatest fear.
Yep.
You go into a domestic abuse situation, you don't know who's crazy, who's got a gun, who's got what.
So. Well, you always expect the unexpected, and that's just one of the things. But you make a very good point, because internal affairs or professional standards investigations, what they like to say now, are usually handled by their own. And you got to wonder if their own investigating their own is the way to take care of things. Independent bodies in some states, some provinces. But, yeah, that's a big deal, that's for sure.
Well, and you know what? Look, I am of the mind that 99.99% of all officers out there, law enforcement across the country, is there because they want to help the public.
Yep.
They want to do good. They want, and I don't think I write about this in the book and in my columns frequently. I don't think we acknowledge the fact that we send officers out there into the maw of violence every day, and they're scared.
Yeah.
Why do they pull the trigger so fast? Because sometimes they're bad cops.
Yeah.
Absolutely, I get it. But sometimes they're just scared. They're scared that they're not going to go home to their wife and kids. So anyway, that's one. I write about law enforcement a lot, but I hope you read my columns. I think you do, Dana.
I do.
I write about a wide variety of things, from top of the line headline cases that are going on to little bitty stories about people who've worked in law enforcement and really should be recognized.
Yeah, and it's fantastic, and we'll talk more about it, and click on the link in the show notes on how to pick up the book, Thinking Outside the Crime and Justice Box. Now, one other thing, you do many other things, but is your fine work with investigation discovery, and some work on the Chandra Levy case, and a little bit later, Casey Anthony. I want to get in more depth to both of those cases, but let's talk a little bit about your work with investigative discovery.
Well, you know, it's funny. I had sort of gotten out of television for a while and written books and did my column and did all sorts of different things. And I was approached recently by Jupiter Entertainment, which is a big, in my estimation, one of the best producer stuff today. And they said, we're doing a three-part series on the JonBenet Ramsey case. And we know you covered it, Diane, and I did. I moved to Boulder for a while when that case first broke. And would you come and be interviewed? And I said yes. And as it turned out, I played a pretty large part in all three episodes especially the first two episodes of that three-part series. And it's like, I don't know, the floodgates opened. And I was asked then by Jupiter and Investigation Discovery to help them with a series on Chandra Levy, that cold case out of Washington, D.C., where the intern was mysteriously killed and her body wasn't found for more than a year. So we just wrapped shooting on that, and next week we shooting on our series about the Casey Anthony case, and I covered that for Newsweek and the Daily Beast, their website, the Daily Beast, when the trial was going on. So we're going to reprise that a bit. We've gotten some startling new interviews with the parents of Casey Anthony, which my lips are sealed. I'm not supposed to say much about it, but wow, you're going to want to watch this series.
Yeah, I can't wait. And that's on.
It's going to be dynamite.
That's on Investigation Discovery. And, you know, talking a little bit about the Anthony case, I interviewed Cindy and George and many people, Jeff Ashton, everybody involved in the case. And it's that public's fascination. Not just seeing, you know, the cute little girl that disappeared, that was murdered, and the mother and all that sort of stuff, but these cases that go on and on and on and on and on every day. There'll be one tomorrow that we could talk about if we wanted to. Why is the public so fascinated, Diane?
Well, I think fear that it could happen to them or their family. And, you know, there's a reason that when you see a little baby in a buggy, or you see a little tiny puppy or a little kitty, you go, oh, you know, it's innate in our souls to want to protect these little beings. And when a mother loses track of her child, or whatever Casey Anthony's latest excuse is for not knowing how her daughter died, we're shocked. Our senses are assaulted by that.
Yeah.
And I think the reason there's still a lot of interest, it's because I think people think that justice was not done. No one has paid for that little girl losing her life.
No, exactly. And we can mention case after case after case. And the Chandra Levy one, too, is it goes back even further. And Gary Condon and Washington and politics and all of that sort of stuff. What can you tell us about that case?
Well, you know, it's interesting. As we started to do this shoot and do the research on it and whatnot, Gary Condit, the former congressman with whom she was having an affair, was on Dr. Phil trying to sell a new book he has written. And, of course, I watched, and I was flabbergasted to hear him and see him look Dr. Phil right in the eye and say, no, I didn't have an affair with her.
Yeah.
Well, no, she came into my office a couple times, and she was at my condo once or maybe twice. And Dr. Phil said, once? And he, well, maybe twice. And he said, really? Well, in your book it says a handful of times she came to your condo. Oh, well, you know, what? And he had all these excuses. And I wish Dr. Phil was more of a journalist. I wish he would have said, well, if you didn't have an affair with her, then how come the DNA swab they took of your cheek matched the stain they found on a pair of used underwear in her clothes hamper? How does that work? How did your DNA get in her panties?
Yeah.
But he didn't ask him that question. Maybe they had agreed not to be, you know, too forceful with him. I don't know. But that case, I'll tell you, Dana, I think that case would have gotten a lot more legs, as they say, had September 11th, if that hadn't happened just 4 months later.
Right, yep.
You know, and then after that, there was the D.C. sniper case of John Muhammad and Lee Boyd Malvo in D.C. And so the Chandra Levy thing just sort of petered out, as they say. It's really a fascinating case, as I looked back at it.
And that and other stories on Investigation Discovery, check your local channel guide to see where you can watch that. Diane Diamond is here, one of my favorite guests. Last time you were on, we were talking about Fox News, and then your my story and your story ended up and stuff, and I thought, oh, she's going to kill me for this. And and I even sent you a note saying, geez, I hope you're not mad. And
you, no. Well, you should explain what that was. That was right after the chairman, Roger Ailes, was drummed out of office because Gretchen Carlson, one of their top anchors, had revealed that she was suing him for sexual harassment.
Yeah. And you came on the show and talked about your time there, and then they picked up on the story and all that. And, but now it's changed. We're going to hear nothing but Trump and Clinton for the next few months, and probably should, but there are other stories out there. But you getting back into TV now from when you were, let's say, doing your show with Geraldo, how different is it?
Well, you know, I'm not, it's different. It's different than the show I did with Geraldo. It's different than the time I spent at Hard Copy, for example, traveling around the country, wearing myself out, loving every minute of it. But,
right.
You know, I'm older and wiser now, and I think what was missing then was perspective. And taking the time to really research things and interview not just two or three people. Hey, now I got a story. I got three interviews. Now we take our time with these things, and I'm really all about that. I really like the fact that we, for Casey Anthony, for example, well, I can't tell you everybody we've talked to, but, you know, we go back and we talk to the parents, and we really take the time to put it into a historical perspective. You know, I was thinking about the Chandra Levy case, and if Gary Condit had been around today, and would such an affair make such a difference? Would it be such a shameful thing? And I think really what it was with Gary Condit, for example, he just wouldn't admit anything. And he strung it out, and he made the reporters more curious, and they dug more. But they couldn't get anything because Gary Condit wouldn't really talk. And it's, I do appreciate the extra time and effort and thoughtfulness that goes into the TV that I'm doing today, which is documentary style, pretty much, as opposed to what I was doing before, which was slam, bam, hurry up, this is a breaking story, go and get it, put it on the air.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What makes a good reporter?
Oh.
There's a wide open question.
Yeah. Listening. Listening to people. That, you know, my husband is such a fan, of course, of mine, and he's also in the news business. He's an anchorman on CBS Radio here in New York. I've said to him in the past, boy, I got lucky. Guess what this person told me? And he says, no, you didn't get lucky. You just listened. And you know, I really think that people want to be heard. And if you go into a situation, say, God forbid there's a murder in a neighborhood, and you go to the neighbors and you say, what do you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you stick a microphone in their face, they don't say much. But if you go and knock on the door and say, hi, how are you? My name is Diane Diamond. Gosh, can you believe what happened over here? I just can't believe it. What do you think?
Mm-hmm.
And you ask an open-ended question like that and just listen. You get gems. That's what makes a good reporter, I think, is A, innate curiosity. My mother always called me, a busybody. innate curiosity. And then the ability to listen.
That's a big part of it. That's a big part of it, all right. You know, we were talking a little bit about Diane's work with the Investigation Discovery and the, JonBenet Ramsey case and all these other cases that have come up. Lots of talk, you know, after the Ramsey case 20 years later and all the stories that were done and threats of lawsuits. In fact, I still have a letter in my in my desk drawer here from Linwood, how unhappy he was with me, with a guest I had on my show many years ago talking about Anna Nicole Smith. Now it's interesting to see that these stories are being retold and answers are being given when maybe the whole story hasn't been told. What are your thoughts on that and the threats of civil suits and all these things?
Well, let me first tackle the JonBenet Ramsey case. You know, when they first came to me, I thought, why do people care about a 20-year-old case?
Yeah.
But then I realized they really do. They really do. They thirst after knowing now in retrospect what is it that everybody's saying. And I think that, you know, I'm seeing that with the Casey Anthony case, for example. There was so much passion outside that courtroom every day. You know, there were pickets and, you know, find her guilty and, you know, make sure the jury does their work. And it was just so almost vicious. And you look back now, and we, as I say, I did not, but one of our producers went down and did interviews with the two parents of Casey Anthony. And they have now had time to reflect. And they told us some very interesting things about how their process, their thought process has come along. So some startling things, frankly. I don't mean to keep teasing you with this, but
no,
I really can't say much more than that. But I think that that's what attracts people to these older cases. That it's like, yeah, I remember that O.J. case, or I remember that Menendez brothers case, but gosh, I've forgotten about it. Let's see if there's something new. And in the JonBenet Ramsey case, I got to tell you, Dana, I was shocked. It was the highest rated series on Investigation Discovery ever.
Well, I believe it.
Whoa!
Yeah.
So that was kind of nice.
You know what? With your work and your history and the story, that story will never die. The poor girl died, and the family has
Mama died.
Gone through this. Mama's died, and you know, seeing Burke on Dr. Phil again. Dr. Phil's not an interviewer, but all of a sudden, because Burke was smiling, people were saying he did it. Well, no, there's a lot more to it than that.
Right, and you brought up the whole threat of civil cases and Lynn Wood.
Yep.
Boy, if I'm ever in trouble, I'm going to hire Lynn Wood, I'll tell you.
I think so,
that's
yeah.
That's a bulldog. you know, we weren't the only ones to do a series on the JonBenet case. CBS did a two-part series with a pal of mine, Jim Clemente from the FBI, retired now, but he was with the Behavioral Sciences Unit. And they had a cadre of professionals come in, look at the evidence again. They recreated the home. They recreated some evidence and, you know, let's look at it and dissect it. And they concluded that it was Burke Ramsey, who was 9 years old at the time, who killed his sister. Mm. And then the parents covered it up. And don't you know, guess who's suing?
Mm-hmm.
Guess who's suing CBS? Yes, it would be Burke Ramsey, now 29 years old. So, you know, there's some liability when you go back and look at these old cases. And I think at Investigation Discovery, we report the facts, we lay it out, we show you the interviews we got, we tell you about the research, and then we let you decide.
And it's not just the what I like about Investigation Discovery is it's not just the super high-profile cases. Lots of cases are on there. There's so many stories that can be told, and you know, I'm sure you've talked to the people. I've talked to the people. There's so many people that don't know how to get their story told, and you know, what about that? You know, the Nancy Grace Show is gone now. You're doing great work at ID, but should there be more of those types of programs around for people to come in and get that publicity or that PR so their story can get out there that they need?
I wish there were. I really, honestly, I still lament the fact that Court TV is gone.
Yeah.
You know, that it was a smallish audience, but it was a passionate audience. And now Nancy Grace is gone. Jane Velez Mitchell's show is gone. There's a new show in the afternoon. It's seen on the afternoon here with Chris Hansen.
Mm-hmm.
The Crime Watch Daily is the name of it. You know, I have to tell you, you asked me what makes a good reporter. I'll tell you the hardest thing for me as a reporter is the mounds of emails and calls and letters through my agent that I get. Please tell my story. There has been an injustice done.
Yeah.
Please help me out. And, I mean, you know, as former law enforcement yourself, some people are just delusional. You know, I'm sorry, lady, your son has a rap sheet as long as my arm, and he was caught on videotape shooting that police officer, so I can't help you.
Yeah.
You know, but there are many, many more people who my heart just bleeds for them, and I wish I could do something. Sometimes they just want an autopsy looked at for a second opinion. Did my child really commit suicide? And I'll be honest with you, but please don't badger him, folks. Michael Bodden, the coroner here from New York, he has done some autopsies for these, looked at the autopsies and given a report on them simply because I sent them to him.
Yeah.
And he'll do it just pro bono gratis because he's a great guy. And I wish I could do more stories on all, for all of these people, but I can't. I'm one person.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just one person here sitting at my little desk with my little computer. So I wish there were more of these programs. Maybe we should get you to come to New York and do one yourself, huh?
Yeah, you bet. Anytime you want me, I'm around for you, Diane. Diane Diamond's new book, Thinking Outside the Crime and Justice Box, and I've convinced her to stay for another 15 minutes because we've got lots to talk about. When you start a new job, what you're doing, and you've been doing this for so long, how does Diane Diamond decide what she's going to do? You know, you say you're writing another book. You just got a book out. You're doing Investigation Discovery. You're doing other shows, and you've got time for me. God bless you. How do you decide what you're going to do? You're so busy.
Well, I don't know. I guess it has to touch me, you know, and I have a real soft spot for underdogs. And so, you know, people ask me, why did you get involved in the Michael Jackson case? Because children were involved. That's why. They were underdogs, and they were going up against a big multi-million dollar entity there, and their voice was not being heard. The book I am really interested in writing now is about how if there is a conflict in a family because they don't know what to do with the aging mom or dad, and one of the siblings goes to court, well, the court system here in America, and I found that it is nationwide, they step in, and instead of mediating or helping to understand what's the dynamic here, what's going on, they almost immediately put the elder person under what's called guardianship. They become a ward of the court. And this older person is without rights. They lose all their civil rights. Once you're a ward of the court, you cannot decide how to vote or where to live or who can come in your house or who your doctors are or how to spend your money. You may have a will and a trust and a whatever, but the court is going to appoint a guardian and a conservator, and they're going to spend your money the way they want to spend your money. And so, you know, these elderly people are underdogs, and it tears at my heart in a way where I just started investigating it, and I realized it's a problem nationwide, especially a problem in my home state of New Mexico.
Right.
Because this system exists there, but in New Mexico, everything is sequestered. What they call sequestered, kept secret.
Right.
And nobody can talk about it. Well, I got people to talk about it because I asked open-ended questions and I listened. And so beginning, I think, next week, maybe the week after, I have written a five-part series on this problem in New Mexico, and it will run in the Albuquerque Journal, which is a great newspaper out there. So, you know, we'll see if that makes any ripple effects and changes some laws. It's really an awful system where brothers and sisters fight, and then some brothers and sisters don't get to see their parents in the final years or weeks of their life.
Yeah, no, it's awful. Oh. It's awful. Elder abuse and all of that is just something that wrenches at your heart, and it makes you think that now with this big political change that we've seen, if we actually have seen it, that maybe some of the politicians will grab some of these concerns statewide or nationalwide and do something about it. Or what do you think, Diane? Is this something the politicians are going to grab onto?
Well, you know, smart politicians here in America have to realize things are changing. They have to change. They cannot just go to Capitol Hill and do nothing, which, frankly, our Congress has done for the last few years, nothing. They sit on their thumbs, they wait, you know, until the budget's about out, and then they have a last-minute vote, and they sort of put a Band-Aid on it.
Yeah.
I think they have to. You make a really good point. I think to keep voters, they're going to have to start addressing some of these quality-of-life issues. You know, health care. Okay, Trump's going to blow up Obamacare. What are we going to replace it with?
Exactly.
What's going to happen to the 20 million people who finally got insurance? I don't have an answer, but I'm not elected to figure out this stuff, you know. Education. Why does it cost so much to go to college? What do we do with our elderly people in this country? What about the mentally ill?
Yeah.
Who, you know, I'm sorry, you pick up a gun and you start shooting up a school or a shopping mall or something, you're mentally ill.
Yeah.
You should have been in some sort of program or institution, or your parents should have gotten help managing you sometime years ago. So these are issues. Politicians are going to have to start addressing this stuff. They just are, or they're going to go the way of Hillary Clinton.
Yep. No, it's very true. Medical marijuana or legalization of marijuana is something in Canada is going to happen in the new year. The whole country, several states have passed initiatives this past election. And, you know, I'm an old cop. And when you start thinking about pot, you just haven't convinced me yet. However, I can talk about several people that I know with medical conditions where it has helped them greatly. What are your thoughts on the marijuana initiatives?
I think it's going to be the law of the land nationwide here in the United States in my lifetime.
Yeah.
Because, look, our prisons are swarming with people who, you know, got a third strike for having some, you know, a pound of marijuana. Why are they still in prison for 30 years or 20 years? Or, you know, it's just, I'm going to disagree with you. I think they might as well go ahead and legalize it because it is out there anyway. And it does help people. I have friends, too, that use it for medicinal purposes. There's a child here in New Jersey who needs it to really stay alive and stop having seizures. And the state of New Jersey won't let her use it. She's a tiny child. They just want the liquid form.
Right.
And she can't get it here, so they're moving away. I think the whole country has to rethink the way it's legalized and used and medicinalized. Is that a word, medicinalized?
It is now.
Yes, we just coined a new phrase.
Absolutely.
So how widespread is it legally in Canada?
Well, the medical part of it has been around for a few years now, but the recreational use, the new Prime Minister, Trudeau, has put that on the books very early and said that it will be done by January, February, and it will. Production, selling, things like that are still going to be illegal here, but I can see it across the board. The government take it, tax it, regulate it, and, you know, let's see what happens, you know.
Well, bingo. I mean, you just said the magic word, tax it.
Yeah.
Okay, that's two words. Tax it. The state of Colorado, for example, they were early adopters of let's legalize it. Okay, come on, grow it, you got to get a license. We're going to tax you. You're going to sell it, we're going to tax you. You want a storefront, we're going to tax you. And they, I wish I had an exact figure, but they have made buku millions of dollars just taxing marijuana. So don't you think these other states are going to follow through?
Oh, sure. Yeah,
of course they are.
Everybody
needs the money.
You're right. I don't know if Trump was a pot smoker when he was young. I think he probably was.
I don't know. Obama was, but, you know, Trump doesn't drink or smoke.
Yeah, I've heard that.
His biggest vice seems to be he likes Big Macs.
Yeah, fast food. He likes Kentucky Fried Chicken and Big Macs. So, you know, whatever.
Tubby. Don't you think he got a little tubby during the election?
I think so.
In the campaign.
I think so. But, you know, what is he, 72? 74?
I know. I think he's just 70.
Just 70?
And he's 70-something.
Yeah. So here we go. And I didn't want to talk too much about politics, but, you know, Reagan's first term, And then his second term, the older he got, of course he was shot and had other medical issues and stuff. What do you think about the president and the age and 4 years down the road and maybe 4 years after that? Is he just too darn old?
You know, no, I don't want a youngster to be my president.
There you go.
You know, I really like this Ryan in Congress. He's not the Speaker of the House.
Yeah.
But he's a little bit young. I liked Rubio.
Yeah.
A little bit young. I think we want an older statesman. But, hey, look at Donald Trump's hair. He's got the hair of, like, what, a 42-year-old.
Yes,
you know,
right.
That dude that he does.
Yeah.
I think he seems pretty vigorous, and I heard his campaign manager, Kellyanne, whatever her name is, say on the air, I guess this morning, she looked pretty tired, and she was asked something about him and how his routine, and she said, you know, not one of us on the campaign can figure out when this guy sleeps.
Yeah, apparently he doesn't.
He's always up with the tweeting and the twittering, and, you know, so I think he's got pretty good stamina. Frankly, I worried about Hillary Clinton's health.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's some issues there that hopefully she takes care of. Maybe she's, you know, they didn't want to release everything. But before I let you go, and one of the topics I've got on my little cheat sheet here is something called that I wanted to ask you about is social media and the election and social media altogether. You have Twitter and Facebook and your webpage and all that, and Donald Trump with Twitter, he got in so much trouble and all that. Is this a social media era now that we'll never see change? In fact, it's going to increase more and more?
I think so. I think so. And, you know, campaigns are using social media in ways you can't imagine. I mean, it's almost frightening. It's almost like, you know, Big Brother stuff. They have analytics now, Dana, that, you know, you're on your Facebook or you're on the Internet and you're surfing around and you want to buy product A for your wife. And then you want to buy product B. And then you look up that website, you know, the Drudge Report or Salon.com. There are analytics that keep track of every single thing you do. And the biggest buyer of that information are political parties. And so they know exactly if you are driving a Dodge Caravan and you once looked up Marco Rubio and you've got two kids in college, and they know that because they're on your Facebook page, and that's all, you know, integrated into their system. They can figure out, are you a Democrat or a Republican? And then they can pinpoint their advertisements to you. So is this going to go away? Mm-mm.
No.
I think it's going to get more invasive. But the spoiler on that would be if we all stopped using it so much.
Yeah.
If we decided, you know what, I'm only going to use my computer to read books on Kindle, or I'm only going to use it to write to my mother an email once in a while. I'm going to sit down and I'm going to go to the library and get my books now. That's the way we could counter it.
Yeah.
But it's here to stay.
It's not going to change. Listen, before I let you go, my youngest son is doing his master's degree at American University in D.C.
Oh, good school.
In broadcasting, by the way. And I'm noticing with him, he's sending pictures of himself at the Senate, and he's sending pictures of himself at the White House and all that. Here's a Canadian kid from, how did you say, Saskatchewan? Saskatchewan?
Saskatchewan,
yeah,
however they said
from, it. Speaking of Anthony, I told Jeff Ashton that I was from Pump Handle, Saskatchewan, and he actually believed me that the name of the town was Pump Handle, and he was laughing his rear end off. But here you got a Canadian kid that's in Washington, D.C., doing his master's degree, doing very well for himself, and I'm so proud of him. I could go on all day for him. But the future for this 25-year-old kid is going to be a lot different than what my future as a beat cop was. And because I respect you so much, I'd sure like to get your thoughts on his future in broadcasting.
Well, I have been disappointed in the quality of journalism over the last 10 years or so.
Yeah.
So I don't really know what he wants to do in broadcast or in journalism, but I would recommend to him to get a specialty. You know, go into sports, go into economics reporting, go into politics. you know, become the next John King or Wolf Blitzer. Set yourself apart and do it in a journalistically sound way. If you're doing sports, forget it. You don't have to be journalistically sound. But as soon as he can, if he isn't already working for somebody, get in a newsroom. Do anything they tell you to do. Just start getting your resume lines filled in there, and then you'll meet people that are doing exactly what you want to do, and they will mentor him. I was mentored as a kid when I first got into it, and I try to mentor young people all the time. Good luck to him. What does he want to do?
His mother hates hearing this, but he tells us that he wants to be a war correspondent. And
fabulous.
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't be more proud of him.
That's fabulous.
His mom is doesn't like hearing that, but you know, that's just the way it goes. But kids today, and you hear so much about the media and journalism, and especially through this last political round here, they can't trust them. They're all crooked, all the sort of stuff. And I kept telling him, don't listen to that. Just be what you can be and do it the right way, because there's been a lot of bad raps on journalism and the media lately.
And some of it is well-deserved.
Yes.
I was watching NBC News last night because I used to work there and I have friends there. I know Lester Holt.
Yeah.
And they had a correspondent on there who I know happens to be very close to the Clintons. Yeah. And she was doing a report on Clinton's farewell speech and was like almost crying.
Yeah.
And it made it sound like an obituary or something. And I thought, get it together.
Yeah.
You're supposed to be an objective reporter. You know, I Stephanopoulos, who gives money to the Clintons, is a host on ABC. Okay, that's fine, but don't do politics. No, they put him on politics.
Yeah.
I know that's his expertise, but he's already displayed his bias.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, I can don't get me on my soapbox now.
That's...
But there are still really, really fine, great journalists in the world. And I'll tell you, some of the best are war correspondents. And they go over there and they can be careful, tell your wife, there are safeguards, but thank God for them. Otherwise, we would never know what's really going on over there.
Isn't that the truth? Listen, I appreciate your time. Diane's book, Thinking Outside the Crime and Justice Box, click on the link in the show notes, get out there and purchase it. And, of course, all the good work that she's done and is doing at Investigation Discovery. And DianeDiamond.com, if you want to see a fantastic website, go there. Thank you, ma'am.
Ooh, thank you. Hey, my pleasure. We'll talk soon again sometime soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
That's Diane Diamond, and couldn't find a nicer lady, a more qualified lady, and it's always great to have her on the show. So that's it. That's tonight's show for Scared Monkeys Radio and Access 7, and we'll see you again real soon.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guests' websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.